Hello, this is Ellen Kimball with Oregon Public Broadcasting's Golden Hours, and I haven't devoted a lot of time to the supernatural and the paranormal for a very long time. I have a history back in Florida of doing a lot of late night radio shows because I took over Larry King's late show, and we did a lot of that stuff in Florida. We had all kinds of Bermuda Triangle people and, you know, all of it just totally fascinating to me. And last year I briefly reviewed a book called River of Fear, written by Rod C. Davis. Rod is an author and a very multifaceted gentleman who lives in Nevada. He spent most of his life in southwestern Connecticut. In 1973, he moved to Cape Elizabeth, Maine with his wife and two children. They spent 6 years in Cape Elizabeth, and they became very familiar with a region of Maine known as the Rangeley Lakes area. And I have to tell you, Rob, that is one of the places that I dearly remember with my ex-husband. We went there when we were newly married. So welcome to the show, Rod Davis, author of River of Fear, and let's see, you have many, many other things to talk about, supernatural, paranormal, extraterrestrial. How's your book selling? You're writing a trilogy, so the first book is River of Fear, and now you're going to do River of Fear Pursuit?
That's correct. Okay. Actually, the first book is River of Fear Encounters.
Encounters, yes.
And it's, as you mentioned, it's set in an area that I know very well, which is the Northwest Mountains of Maine, and actually between the towns of Stratton and Rangeley. And
yes.
It is blended with some true-to-life stories that are surrounded by mystery and action. And a business consultant spending time with his wife at their vacation home witnesses a mind-blowing abduction.
Yes.
And the intrigue quickly unfolds as the couple is catapulted into the topsy-turvy world of the paranormal. They encounter what their minds tell them can't be real.
Yes.
And what they hope could not happen does. His wife disappears. And he and a friend develop a tightly coordinated plan that requires the skills of pilots and snowmobilers to mount a daring and dangerous rescue attempt.
Yeah, it sounded, I didn't read the whole book. I skimmed it because I get so many books here. And I turned it over to my husband, who I believe got through most of it. But then I had, there was some pressure for him to have an operation. So I think it's, we have it somewhere. And I apologize. Usually I come on and I've read practically everything. But your website was absolutely fascinating. I spent maybe 2 hours at the website on, that was Wednesday night when my grandkids were sleeping. And I just went from one thing to another. I mean, you have focused on some really fascinating stuff. Now, I'll tell you about my dream last night and how it must have interplayed with your story. You and your wife were involved with a sighting in a home of knife tracks on a wall.
Of what tracks?
Of knife slashes in a wall.
Yes, you
okay.
Were. How did you know that?
Well, because it's on your website.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was just a little bit. I didn't get to the site, what do they call it, the tree, but I couldn't find it this morning when I went to print it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you were living in, where did this take place, in Maine?
No, this actually took place when we moved back to Connecticut.
Oh, Connecticut, okay.
Yes.
So we moved from Maine to Connecticut, and you were aware of various visions in this house, or... supernatural imaginings or realities?
It wasn't visions. These things actually happened.
Okay.
When we moved into the house, it was a disaster from the get-go. Our lawyer, when I had her furniture in the truck on the way to Connecticut, I called to see how the closing went, and he told me it didn't go good.
Ouch.
Because he couldn't get a clear title.
Hmm.
And that turned out to be a blessing. Because we moved into the house, the owner made the agreement that whatever we paid him in rent, he'd deduct from the mortgage amount, and he said he'd clear up the problem very quickly. My mother and father and my wife's mother and father went to the house to open it up to air it out before the moving truck arrived, the house smelled like rotten eggs.
Oh, sulfur smell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that was just the beginning. My mother-in-law, who was a little bit spiritually sensitive, didn't like the house at all.
Uh-huh.
We had things happen in that house that I equate to the things that happened in the Amityville Horror.
Yes, yes.
And one of the, one night I was sound asleep. I'll just tell a couple of things. I was sound asleep and I got woke up. My wife was doing sit-ups in the bed.
Yes, yeah.
And when I saw that, I watched this, and she was, it was like she was a board and hinged at the waist, very robotic. And I woke her up, and the only thing that she remembered of it was that when I said, I love you. And she tried to do the sit-ups the next morning.
Yeah, she didn't have the physical capability of doing that. She
Not
didn't
at
feel
all.
That she could. Because, you know,
all.
Sit-ups can be, unless you're really a marathon runner or devoted to your fitness group.
I don't even think a marathon runner could do.
Oh, really? These were just real hefty marine-like sit-ups, huh?
Very, very rigid.
Wow.
Just like a board hinged.
So how long did you live in the house before the you had, or she had this experience with looking at the pattern of knife cuttings on a wall?
We had been living in the house for maybe about a month at that time when she went to pick up some clothes that were on the floor there, which she's done many, many times, and she saw those hundreds and hundreds of punctures in the wall.
Yes.
And when she looked at it closely, it was unmistakable that they were knife punches.
They all face in the same direction.
Same direction.
Parallel or close to parallel. Yeah,
perpendicular. The right perpendicular.
Whew.
So
how long did it take you to get, how'd you sell that house? I mean,
thank God we couldn't, the owner could not get a clear title.
Oh.
2.5 months later, we moved out and we were very pleased.
I see. So it was not in your hands. Do you know what happened to it?
They were not able to sell it. And eventually, my son went back there about 3 years later, and the house had been torn down.
Good. I guess I feel that way. I mean, I know there are people who live in places where there have been murders. I mean, I guess they tore down the Simpson home and things like that. I don't know any of these stories. We had a story, just a sad story, where people had a little ranch house garage underneath, and the husband went home one night and forgot to turn off the ignition on his car, and they were all asphyxiated from carbon monoxide, which filtered up into their closed-up home in winter.
Uh-huh.
And my doctor bought that house, or had sold the house to the people. And they had a devil of a time. Finally, somebody bought it. You know, they put it onto foreclosure sale. So anyway, my dream was about a similar story to yours, and I'm sure it was just suggestion. But the person who was marking my stomach, as it turned out, crunch, crunch, with a cake splitter. Do you know what that looks like? It's like a little comb with long tines.
Yes.
And, you know, this person was slashing on my tummy. And I woke up in a cold sweat, which I don't do at all much. So I got up this morning at 5 o'clock, had a good laugh, got showered, and came here.
I hope reading my site did.
Yeah, I think it did. It's a little bit spooky for me because I do remember, though. Do you remember Betty and Barney Hill? I think their book was called The Interrupted Journey.
No, I haven't read that one.
Yeah, and they were up in, they're both deceased now, they were up in Exeter, New Hampshire, and they described an alien abduction where they were taken on a spaceship, and they actually had wounds on their body, and he was a black gentleman, I remember, she was a white gal, and they came to my show in Boston, we did an hour's worth of talk. If you get a chance to look that book up, which is probably in old bookstores now.
Uh-huh.
I think it's The Interrupted Journey, Betty and Barney Hill. Anyway, you're currently writing the sequel, River of Fear Pursuit.
Correct.
And all of these novels are based on true life events. Did you put this knife slashing, wall slashing situation in any of your books?
Say that again?
The incident that actually happened to your wife about discovering puncture marks in the wall, is that in your book?
No, that actually is going to come in the fourth book, which is after the trilogy.
I see. Okay. Well, I have to admire you. What do you do for, you're a business consultant, because I had a printout of your actual pursuits, but I couldn't find that, and you didn't send me the whole bio.
Yes, a business consultant.
Uh-huh.
I specialize in helping businesses that are growing faster than what their bank line of credit will let them grow.
Okay.
Typically, a bank will not go with businesses once they get stretched too thin on their credit line.
That's fascinating. And do you like living in Nevada now that you made the cross-country?
We absolutely love living in Nevada.
Yes. Well, I have a son in Salt Lake City, which, of course, is not that far away, but he also grew up in New England and Vermont and moved out there, and he loves it too. We're involved with the Hilton Hawaiian Village timeshare at the Flamingo. Mm-hmm. So I spend a certain amount of time in Nevada during the year. We're actually, I think, planning to go out there next, is it February, I think? So what is this missing time? Are you missing a day?
No,
April 26th, what is that about?
Well, April 26th, I was missing, I found out after the fact, about 3 weeks later, when I experienced a real weird phenomenon, that I lost 50 minutes of time during that, when it happened. I was actually I was driving to a meeting, it was a Saturday morning, at the Rio Casino, and on the way I placed a call to a friend of mine by the name of Wes Bateman, and Wes is one of his claims to fame. Gene Roddenberry got most of his, or I shouldn't say most, but a lot of his ideas for the Star Trek series.
Really?
From Wes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I adopted Wes as a mentor, and I had a question I wanted to ask him, so I gave him a call. He wasn't available, and his daughter asked me to call him back in a couple hours, so as I hung up the phone, I looked at the dash clock, and it was 10:30.
I see.
And just as I crossed over Rainbow, I felt a wavering sensation passed from the front of my body to the back of my body, and it lasted a couple of seconds, and when it stopped, I shook my head, and I said, what in the heck is that all about?
You were driving at the time?
That's correct.
Whoa.
And I looked up, when that happened, I looked up, and I saw a street sign coming up, and I thought that it should be Torrey Pines, because they just crossed over Rainbow.
I see. And these are streets in Nevada.
It was Arville. And the mystery to that is that Arville is 2.5 miles further down the road from Rainbow.
So you had to turn around to get to your...
Well, no, actually, that's where I needed to turn to go to my appointment.
Okay.
And I looked at the clock, and it was still 10:30, and I said, how in the heck can that be? I go 2.5 miles through Vegas and, on a Saturday morning in less than a minute. It can't be done.
Sure. Wow.
And then I discovered 3 weeks later when checking my cell phone bill that I actually made that phone call at 9:40 a.m.
Okay.
So I had 50 minutes of time that I just couldn't account for.
Hmm.
And before that discovery, I told a lot of people about the experience. And some of them said they thought I went through a portal. Others said they thought I went through a vortex. And only one, Wes Bateman, after I told him about my missing time, said he thought I had been pulled aside and given some information for future use. And it turned out that 1 year later, he was right.
What information were you given? That was for April 26, 2004, three people involved in a supernatural event. What was that?
That's correct. Actually, if I need to go back to August 14th, if you don't mind.
Oh, I see. That's right. You've been kind enough to print out some of the chronological
stuff. Actually, on May 26th, I met with a spiritual medium that told me I was going to meet three very influential people, three people are going to be very influential in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And in June, I met one of those, and she gave me details about two that would help me identify them very easily. On August 14th, by chance, I met the second one.
The entity, you had four people.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay,
August 14th,
all right. Take your time.
I had an entity come to me that something happened that night when it came to me that ties four people together. And
can you tell me what that was? Or
sure.
Okay.
When I went to bed at 9 o'clock, I'm an early riser.
Oh, me too.
From 4 to 5 in the morning.
That's right.
And each night when I go to bed, I say my nightly prayers, and then I roll onto my right hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular night, I felt something jump on the left hand or the foot of the bed on my wife's side, And I raised up and looked over to see what was there, but nothing. I couldn't see anything. And I put my head back down, and then I felt hesitant footsteps come across the bed and stop right at my lower back. And then the next thing I felt a warmth settling on my left leg, and I could feel it from my ankle all the way up to my knee. And the longer, I didn't move a muscle, I wanted to see what was going to happen. And the longer I stayed still, the heavier it got. And when it reached a certain point, it didn't get any heavier. And at that time, I equated it to the weight of a medium-sized dog.
Yeah, do you have a dog?
No.
Oh, okay.
We didn't have any animals at the time.
Okay, well, that explains that.
And I stayed still because I wanted to tell my wife exactly what was happening when she came to bed. And she didn't come to bed until 10 o'clock. And for me to stay still for an hour, it's really tough. But when she came up, I told her what had happened and that it was still there. And she walked over to the foot of the bed and ran her hand up my leg from my ankle to my knee about 2 inches above the cover. When she did, that weight instantly disappeared. And I, by the way, I could feel it moving periodically. And times I could swear I felt like it was I could feel breathing. When that happened, we fell asleep. And then the next thing that happened at 11 o'clock, I was woke out of a sound sleep. Something jabbed me in the ribs, just below my rib cage on the right side to about 6 inches to the right of my sternum. And it jabbed so hard it knocked the wind out of me when it woke me up, and it felt like it was going clear to my back.
Huh.
And that was the only thing that happened.
And then that was all in August, and then
that was all that particular night.
August 2003. Then you say that on April 16th, 2004, you met Deborah Moore, one of the three people foretold by the spiritual medium.
That's correct.
Okay, so the chronology goes on. And then 10 days later, you have this supernatural event.
Yes. And the reason why that the meeting with Deborah was very important was the fact that on the second meeting, everything that she did fit what the spiritual medium had said.
I see.
And we had lunch a day or two later, and during that lunch, she told me about a pain she had on her right side, and it was located exactly where I had been jabbed.
Wow.
And Wes Bateman has that same pain, and has had it for years. And both of them had been to the doctor. Both of them had the same test, and neither doctor, or doctors, I should say, because both went to multiple, could find the cause of the pain. And I said, you know, there's some synergy here. Maybe we're supposed to all get together. Would you consider driving with me to meet with Wes?
Huh.
She said, sure, on my next day off.
Okay.
And without realizing it, I didn't realize it when she told me when her next day off would be. Didn't pick a date. She just gave me a day and a week.
Oh, I see.
And we drove down to meet Wes at his home in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Well, sitting there, I don't know what I expected, but no best bells or whistles or sirens or anything went off.
Yeah.
But Wes started telling us he's very, very... he's a physicist and very much involved and knowledgeable in space travel. And he was telling us how spaceships can travel millions of light years in just a few minutes.
Huh.
And when he was telling us, he was looking back and forth between us. And he looked at me. One of the times he looked at me, all of a sudden I saw the air between him and me change. And it looked like I was looking at him through a whole lot of clear water, clear still water. And he stopped talking the moment that happened, and his eyes were locked on mine. And then I saw a line that was about 3/4 of an inch in width or high, and it was a black and brown colors in the middle, and in the middle there was a lot of oscillating, where like what you would see in very tight lines oscillating. Or wavering lines in an oscilloscope, and it was about the width of his head, and I saw it go from me to him.
And this was like in the air, or in the space between the two of you? Whoa. Did he see it?
He didn't see it.
He didn't.
No. But he stopped talking, and the whole time when that line started to go from me to him, I saw him looking up in the air and all around. And when it got to him, that whole thing took maybe about three to five seconds. When air changed back to normal, he just kept looking around, and then maybe about 5 or 10 seconds later, he started talking again, and I let him finish his conversation about the space travel. And when he was done, I said, "Wes, I said, why did you stop talking before?" And he looked at me kind of funny, like he didn't know what I was talking about. And Deborah confirmed that he had stopped talking, and then I told him what I saw.
Huh.
And he said to me, he said, "That was the outer state communicating to you through me." And I said, "I don't think so, Wes, because I saw that line go from me to you." And he didn't say anything.
Huh.
The thing that tied everything together, the next morning, I called him, and he was really excited. He said, "Rod, I've made a major breakthrough on the 9 extraterrestrial messages I'm working on this morning." And when he said that, it dawned on me that the day before was April 26th.
Yes, it was exactly a year from the time.
Right. And he said on April 26, 2003, he thought I had been pulled aside and given information for future use.
Yes.
Well, I think that information was delivered then. Maybe not all of it, but some of it.
Mm-hmm. So he is the one who has posted. Now, let me just explain to people who are not involved with this. You have a magnificent website. You're a really handsome dude too, with the hat and everything. Do you ride horseback in some other life or this one? You're really handsome, beautiful smile, and you are at www.rodc.com, all hunked together. Now your mom made a big mistake. Is your name, what is your full first name?
Full first name is Roderick.
Roderick, okay. But, you know, they tell you when you name your child, don't name a child with the same last name of his first name and the first last letter of his first name. Anyway, if you say Rod Davis, it liaisons in your ear, so you put the C in the middle and it stands out. I know because I was married to a guy named Peter Rabo with the R's together. So rodcdavis.com, and that will lead you to Wes's website. And Wes's website is really fascinating. But and can you just tell our audience a little bit about the 9 messages that supposedly have been received?
Yes. In 1995, there were 9 messages received via radio telescope. And the no one was able to solve what the messages were.
Now, was this, just to pause a minute, I wondered about this. Was this in Arecibo in Puerto Rico? Where did they?
We can't prove that, but we think yes.
Oh, okay, because we were down there last year. It's really a very interesting place.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance to go there, I don't know whether you'd be interested. But in any event, go ahead.
If I could get a look at their logs, I'd love to go.
Oh, wow. Oh, I don't think they let you do that.
No.
Okay, so nine messages.
Yes, the 9 messages, and they're in letters. They're tones, and they're each tone is in a letter, and the letter G separates each section of the message. And Wes started studying the pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Giza, back in 1975. Something really motivated him to do so. And he learned over the years the math system that had been utilized to construct that pyramid. When the SETI messages came, they were actually posted on the SETI website as a link from David Levine. And David Levine posted them as a game.
Yes.
And Wes's daughter had noticed these messages and gave them to Wes. One day, Wes nonchalantly did something, just kind of hit him, that it seemed like there was a tie between the math that went into the Great Pyramid of Giza and the math in the messages. And he's been utilizing that knowledge to solve them. And he said, he's told me and he showed me, which I'm not allowed to say right now, but the information is mind-blowing. And what I've seen that he can do with what he's learned from them is incredible.
We were also privileged to go to Egypt in, I think it was 1984, and those edifices are absolutely incredible. My husband actually climbed down into the tomb, but he thinks that they were not built as tombs. Isn't that one of his theses?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So Wes believes that they were built to harness energy. And the energy, he has a theory that the energy was utilized in the wrong way, and it changed the solar system that we live in forever. And as a matter of fact, something that kind of supports what his theory is, when the rover landed on Mars, they found evidence of life on that, which, and according to Wes, and every until there was this great explosion in our solar system that was created by the misuse of the pyramid, the energy created by the pyramid, there was life on all of the planets. And the theory also is that the different individuals that are on planet Earth, because everybody was brought here, the different races are actually the races that were on those different planets. That's the theory.
Huh. Wow, that is really far out. I mean, how does anybody, you know, I mean, in a day-to-day life, you know, you go to the store and you tell little people a little bit about what you're doing, and this goes for you and the other people. How do you keep them from thinking that you're totally off the wall?
You know, I mean,
you've got another life. I don't know, what is your training? College guy and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the thing is that I, in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
I was taken back when
yes.
people looked at me very strange. At this point in my life, I don't care.
Of course. Yeah.
I want as many people to know as possible the things that I've experienced. If they believe, great. If they don't,
that's good. Well, at least you're not proselytizing for this at all.
Right.
What do you think of the Roswell events? You must have some feelings about those.
Well, I have very definite feelings because when I came to Las Vegas, I wanted to learn metallurgy, and I worked for a year in a lab with a great metallurgist, as far as I'm concerned, and an elderly gentleman. He was 72 at the time, and when you start a process, you have nothing to do but wait until this process can go through its regimen. And so we talked periodically. And one day out of the clear blue sky, I had asked him why he takes elderly people to the doctor and why he delivers food to them and whatnot. And he said, well, I was in the NSA, and I hope that God can find a warm spot in his heart to forgive me for some of the things that I had to do.
This is the National Security Administration?
National Security Administration.
Okay, I just like to get the acronyms, because when I hear acronyms, I don't know what they are sometimes.
After that, I don't
know. So he was atoning for his sins.
Yes.
But did he ever tell you anything about what they were?
No, he didn't. But
yeah.
One day, out of the clear blue sky, I mean, we were just sitting there saying nothing, waiting for a process to complete, and he said to me, I was part of the Roswell cover-up during the Eisenhower administration.
Oh, my goodness.
So at that point in time, it confirmed to me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, Roswell is not a figment of imagination.
Oh, there's an awful lot of evidence out there. I myself have never been there. I haven't been to Meteor Crater. I haven't been to Roswell, New Mexico. But maybe now that we're living on the West, we moved here to Portland 7 years ago, and it's like being a kindergartner in geography, you know? I mean, there's mountains here, and there's sea coast, and nobody swims, but it's a fascinating idea, fascinating story. So are you still in touch with this gentleman?
He passed a couple of years back.
I see. Yeah. I have to ask you, and we haven't really talked about it, but you do say God bless and so forth at the end. Are you a religious man at all?
I don't think religious is the proper term.
Okay.
I am very spiritual.
All right, exactly.
And, I believe very, very strongly in God, in Jesus Christ, in the Holy Trinity.
Okay. How were you raised in a particular persuasion, religious?
I was raised as an Episcopalian.
Okay.
When I was 18, my wife was Catholic, and I changed to the Catholic faith.
I see.
And in the past 5 years, I because of all the research I've done and what I see going on in the churches, I would say that at this point in time, I'm more of a Gnostic.
Yes, that's exactly how I describe myself. I raised 5 children. I don't know if you read any of the bio that I ship out periodically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say. I'm in a blended family. My husband and I have been married for 32 years. He had 3 older children who all married out of our faith. We're Reformed Jews and raised the children as Reformed Jews. My biological daughter has become almost an Orthodox Jew. She keeps the kosher law. She keeps all the holidays, sends her children to parochial school, you know, Jewish parochial school. And my son, who's the youngest of the 5 kids, was baptized as a Mormon and lives a Mormon life in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go to the Unitarian Fellowship here because that covers all bases. And I just thought about that because people have asked me, when I tell them about my religious feelings about and spiritual feelings, I feel that God or the Spirit made, because my grandson, for example, a couple of days ago asked me, does Hashem have eyes? Now, Hashem is the Hebrew word for God. They don't say God. And I said, you know, Solomon, I just feel that God is a spirit. He you know, he doesn't have eyes like you and I have eyes. He's not in a man shape. And here in my 60s, I'll be 66 on May 31st this year, I still have feelings that I can't go into a place and be told what to think. That's what bothers me.
You and I are from the same mold.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the reasons why Linda, my daughter's Judaism, turns me off is most of it is in Hebrew, which is a language that I was never privileged to study. She was able to go to Israel and learn rudimentary stuff, and they really brainwashed her when she was over there for a year. But she's floating back to the middle of the road. The problems of practicing a minority religion in the United States are considerable. My husband and I both went to high school where we were one of just a few Jewish children. We remember a lot of anti-Semitism and so forth. So I'm about where you are. It's fascinating. And you're a morning person, too. You probably get up and make a cup of coffee at 5 o'clock. I usually don't see my husband until maybe 10:30, you know.
I'm actually, there's many times by 5 o'clock, I'm on my second cup of coffee.
Yes, exactly. Now, are you married to, we call ourselves larks, like the little bird that wakes up, and the people who have the evening metabolism, they're owls. And I am married to an owl, and my previous husband was an owl, you know, late night people. Is your wife?
I would say she's more owl. she doesn't stay up late, but mm-hmm. she doesn't like to go to bed as early as I do.
She's
usually up around 6 a.m.
Yeah, wow. So you have those few hours. I don't know why I got off into that, but it's just kind of real. You've also seen some things in the last closing minutes here. You've seen some things, or you feel you have a nightly visitor. Is that correct?
Yeah, Stephanie Ann Stevens. I'd like to take just a moment of
sure, with, please.
I'm co-writing her memoirs, and something interesting that happened in 2008. April seems to be a significant month for me.
Here
in
we
April
are.
2002, I went to see Hans Christian King. He's a world internationally famous spiritual medium, and I'd never been to a spiritual medium before in my life, and that was when I went to him, that was when I was writing River of Fear Encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, he said, Rod, he said, he's going through all things and telling me about things that he was blowing my socks off, and all of a sudden he stopped in the middle of a sentence and he says, book, where's your book? I says, what do you mean my book? He says, the book you're writing. And I says, it's at home. He says, you've got to finish that book. It's very important. And I tried to figure out for myself, what's so important about a fiction, a work of fiction? And then after, he kept saying book over again, and he says to me, what's your book about? And I told him, and he says, why is that so important? And then he said to me, you're going to write an important book. And I didn't see that, because I don't write anything but fiction. I incorporate truth in it, but it's fiction.
Yes.
And then, right around that same time, I found out just recently from Stephanie that she's been doing angel writing for quite a few years. That's one of her gifts.
Right now, just tell us, Stephanie, there's a link from rodcdavis.com to Stephanie's writing. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so you'll see a little picture of her down there. So whatever we talk about today, you can branch out from Rod's site, www.rodcdavis, including finding out about the book River of Fear Encounters and hopefully the new book. You'll call me and let me know when that's coming out.
Right.
So go ahead.
So the right around that same time, in her angel writing, she was told to write her memoirs. But she didn't feel comfortable about doing it because writing isn't her forte. A mutual friend, introduced us to each other in June of last year. And in, I think it was November, she asked me if I would consider co-writing her memoirs. So it's almost like, and if it turned out, she is the third person that the spiritual medium had told me about in May of 2003.
Wow. That's amazing.
But after, in June 18th, very briefly,
sure,
because you started asking about it, I had a spiritual contact, physical spiritual contact, which was absolutely awesome. I don't know how long it lasted, Owen, but I was euphoric during the whole time.
You weren't drinking, right?
Not drinking. I had woke up, it was around 4 in the morning, and I was laying in bed thinking, well, I guess I'll get up this happened when I was in, I'd gone to bed, just finished my nightly prayers, and I rolled to my right side, or onto my right side, and I heard something on my right side of the room. And I rolled back to look to see what it was, and that's when it's all described. I don't want to take the time because we're short on time, but
yeah.
I felt it come to my body, and it changed my life. I don't know how long it lasted. I have no sense of time.
How did it change your life?
I look at people. Everybody I look at now, I look at them far differently than I did before. I don't look at them as a stranger. I don't know how to explain it.
Mm.
I look at them as a fellow human being.
Yes.
And I right after that is when I began to have my visions, and some of them come to pass in a few weeks. Some of them haven't come to pass yet. But on January 25th, I had a vision come to pass within hours, and the thing that if I only understood what they were, there's times that I could avoid an unpleasant experience.
I see.
But they're not all unpleasant.
Uh-huh. Well, you have some fascinating pictures on your website, including one of a vision of what looks like sunlight behind. That's your wife, right? The picture.
Oh, you're talking about the, is this the, could this be the, spiritual light.
You posted a picture of a woman sitting on a bench with a huge light behind it. I'm sorry.
That's Stephanie Ann Stevens.
Oh, that's Stephanie. Okay, I'm sorry. You claim that this was taken at a time of the day when the sun was either not up or not in that position.
It wasn't. It hadn't reached that part of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing the book with Stephanie, which is titled "Memoirs of a Physical of a Metaphysical Master, Servant of God," she asked me at the beginning of this month what ideas I had for the book cover, and we discussed different things. And then the next Sunday, she and her husband went out in the backyard. They have a huge cross that they built in the backyard, and he received a message, so to speak, to build that cross. And I suggested that she sit on in front of it in a lotus position, looking up to it, and have him take the picture. Well, they modified, and just as he was going to take the picture, a blinding bright white light filled the lens, and couldn't see anything when he snapped it.
Huh.
And she was sending the ohm as he was snapping.
Yes. Yes, I've used that in meditation. Ohm.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yes.
Yeah, I have my own mantra, though, that I usually use. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I could talk to you for hours. I really wish we were there and we could share one of the cups of coffee. We're probably on the... I say to people, I am thermally incompatible with my husband because he likes hot weather and I like cold. And I'm metabolically incompatible with him because he likes the evening and I like the morning. But we do get together, but not on these subjects. And there's a huge part of me. He's an electrical engineer, trained as a software engineer, very logical. And when I start to talk to him about spirituality, you know, his eyes just glaze over. And so, but he's really good with taxes and our investments and things like that. So
we'll show him what he caught on film on the deck.
Yeah, actually, he was the one that brought it out, and I showed him your picture last night, mm-hmm. and he made a screensaver out of his picture, and he's going to make a screensaver, I guess, if that's going to be your book cover, I'm going to have that on mine because I love that picture.
Of Stephanie.
Yeah, of Stephanie, yeah. Mm-hmm. So please contact me when you have the new book, and it was just delightful to finally get to this much-delayed interview. You're really an interesting guy. Why do you wear the cowboy hat? Do you have horses or ride or
no,
do anything like that?
I ever since I can remember, when I was 4 or 5 years old, I wanted cowboy hat and cowboy boots, and when we moved to Nevada, I finally started wearing them.
That really gives me, you know, when I was a little girl, I didn't want dolls, but I went to visit my grandmother who lived in Los Angeles. We lived in Florida, and she took me to Knott's Berry Farm. At age 8, I bought, and still have a picture somewhere, of myself with Roy Rogers gold guns in holsters and a hat, a cowboy hat. I always wanted to be a cowgirl, not a call girl. Sorry. Well, I'll leave it there. Again, your website is www.rodcdavis.com. I very rarely have somebody for almost the entire hour, and you're it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, my dear. Good luck to you, and God bless. God, however we agnostics define him. And agnostic means that if he walked into the room and said, I'm God, I would say, nice to meet you, lady. That's an old feminist joke. Take care of yourself, and we'll look forward to speaking again.
You too, Ellen, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, bye.